VentureCast.
Hi, and welcome to Deep Leadership. I'm your host, John Rennie. Well, I hope all is well with you today. It is Saturday morning, and I'm drinking a hot cup of Bottom Gun Coffee from my friends at bottomguncoffee.com. I have another great show lined up for you, but before we get started, I just wanted to mention my latest leadership book. It's called You Have the Watch, and it's available on my website and on Amazon. In fact, it's a number one new release and bestseller on Amazon. I'm really excited about this new book because it's not actually a book. It's a guided journal for leaders that will take you through an entire year of leadership training. There are 50 themes in the book, and each day you'll reflect on a different facet of that theme. Now, this journal is designed to be on your desk at work for you to read and reflect on for about 15 minutes each morning. Leadership skills are like any other skills. You need to practice them to get better at them, and this journal helps you practice those skills. Now, if you're interested in this guided journal, go to youhavethewatch.com or Amazon to pick up your copy today. If you're looking for other ways to support what I do on this show, purchase any one of my books on johnsrennie.com, and podcast listeners can use the discount code DEEP at checkout for additional savings. Also, I just wanted to mention that Deep Leadership is now ranked in the top 2.5% most popular shows out of 2.9 million podcasts globally, according to ListenScore. I wanted to thank each of you for listening in every week and sharing these episodes with your friends. You have helped this podcast grow into a top-performing show, so thank you very much. Well, that is it. Today, we're going to be talking about positive leadership, and my guest is Dr. Craig Dowden. Craig wrote the book on this subject. He's the author of Do Good to Lead Well, The Science and Practice of Positive Leadership. He's going to help us understand how to get the most from our teams in a positive way. I love Craig's approach, and I know you will as well. So, are you ready to dive in? Let's get started.
Welcome to Deep Leadership. Leadership is a people business. That's the philosophy of your podcast host, John Rennie. As a former Cold War submarine officer who spent 20 plus years leading businesses in corporate America before starting his own manufacturing business, he knows that leadership matters. Leadership matters. Are you ready for some real world actionable advice from John as well as his expert guests?
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
I'm ready.
The show starts right now.
Welcome to the Deep Leadership Podcast. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Craig Dowden. Craig is an inspiring and thought-provoking executive coach, Forbes author, and keynote speaker who partners with leaders and executives to tackle their most important personal and organizational challenges. He holds a doctorate in psychology with a concentration in business and is a certified positive psychology coach. He is the author of the popular book, Do Good to Lead Well, The Science and Practice of Positive Leadership. And I am excited to have him on the show to talk about the concept of positive leadership. So, Craig, welcome.
Thanks, John. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. Looking forward to the conversation.
I am as well. So it's an honor to have you on the show. And I'm really excited to talk about the idea of positive leadership so I can understand what is meant by that. But before we dive into that subject, tell us a little bit about yourself. How did you end up becoming an expert in the science of leadership, teams, and organizational excellence?
Well, growing up, I was always fascinated by what makes people tick. It was just something I naturally gravitated towards. And then in university, got exposed to psychology. So I was like, all right, I got to specialize undergraduate in psychology. And then I found out about business psychology and consulting psychology. And my thought process was, well, people have personalities, which are fascinating. Businesses and organizations have personalities, which is fascinating. Throw them together, I'll never be bored. And fortunately, I was right. So a lot of fun.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I have interviewed a number of psychologists that are involved in the leadership field because it is, you know, I say leadership is a people business. Well, what more to understand people is psychology. So it's interesting that the two cross paths, and I think understanding how human behavior is can it certainly be helpful in learning how to lead people and manage people because it's. You know, I like to say people are messy, and that's just the way it is. So
it's a beautiful description of it, and absolutely, and that's the magic and the challenge of organizational life because people are messy, which is the greatest potential and the greatest upside because bringing that messiness together is what that's where the magic happens. And then when you can figure out how to do it well, it's fabulous. And sometimes it can go not so well.
Yes, absolutely. That's so true. You say that your role is to bridge the gap between what science knows and what leaders actually do. So that's really interesting, because it's the sort of the science and then the practice. And, you know, we talked before we get started, I'm more of a practitioner and less of the science. Why is it so important that we tie these things together, the science and the practice?
Well, I think for me, and that's why I wanted to pursue my PhD in psychology, specialization in business, is that there's a lot of great advice. You Google, you know, positive leadership practices, and you get millions of entries via Google. Mm. And then there's so much powerful research that's been done. So I'm a huge advocate and a big fan of evidence-based practice. So when we can weave the science into leadership practice, it's so powerful, because what it does is maximize the chances we're going to have the impact that we want to have. And so for me, it's all about, so what does the research say on any given topic? And now as a leader, figuring out, okay, how do I translate that into practice? And so I love that intersection, because sometimes there's a heavy focus on the research side, and then, well, what do we do with that? Or there's a focus on the practitioner side, which is great. And then it's, okay, so how do we build that bridge between the two?
I love that. I love that. Because as I lean towards one end of it, practitioner. However, there's been many times where I've read a book that's research-based, and I just, like, a light bulb goes off, like, wow, that is really, that's why people act a certain way. That's why this works. That's why these type of leaders are more effective. So I really do think that even practitioners like myself need to tap into that science to just either validate or develop a better understanding of why things happen a certain way. So I really do like that idea.
Well, and I love your perspective on that, John. And then also, I would say sometimes on the, and maybe even often on the research side, there's almost this, well, the practitioner piece isn't that scientific lens. And it's like, no, there's so much power on, because you have to translate these insights into behaviors. And so there can be, you know, too much leaning on both sides. And for me, I just love, just like yourself, that passion, the intersection, because there's so much where you can learn and reflect on and think about, how do we take this and make this valuable, have a positive impact on the world and positive impact on our organization?
I love that. That's great. Yeah. So as I was just going to ask you, you know, as an executive coach and working with leaders, what are you working to help leaders with, and what are the kind of problems that leaders are facing today that they look for extra help with?
Yeah, it's and I think today there's never been a more challenging time to lead than right now. Yeah. People talk about VUCA, the volatility, the uncertainty, the complexity, and the ambiguity. I would say we're VUCA-fied to the extreme right now. And the challenges that I support my clients in facing and working through is really around, how do they bring the best out of themselves, and how do they bring the best out of the teams and the organizations that they lead? And so, and as you talked about so rightly at the beginning, John, around that, people are messy and we are messy. And so cutting through the noise, figuring out what drives us, what drives others, what motivates others, and then figuring out how to get us all aligned in a common direction, that's really critical. And so I'm very much focused. I'm not talking about how do you structure your business or streamline your operations. It's really around an internal job, if you will, about restructuring ourselves and aligning ourselves to ensure we have the impact we most want to have. And that's all around mastering our mindset and mastering our emotions and impacting the people around us.
Yeah, that sounds good. And it's going to lead into your next book, which I want to talk about. But let's talk about this first book, because I really like the idea of do good to lead well. And again, this is the intersection of science and practice of positive leadership. So take us into a little bit about why you wrote this book. And this book's been out for a little while, but tell us why you wrote this book initially.
Yeah, I was, and thank you for asking the question. That's great. For me, when I, through my executive coaching practice, one of the things that I saw and heard in conversations that I was having is a lot of times executives and organizations I was working with, they were struggling with, well, do I do the right thing or do I drive results? And they almost saw it as mutually exclusive. Yeah. So I can leave, you know, let my ethics and integrity go and drive exceptional results, or I can do the right thing and necessarily my results won't be as powerful. And to me, again, going back to my bias toward science, there's so much research out there that shows that doing good and leading well, doing good and performing well, they are intimately interconnected. So I wanted to break that assumption that there's a dichotomy around that and highlight the path to positive leadership that drives positive results. And there's decades of research that highlights some key leadership qualities that enable us to do that. So my motivation was to define what those qualities were, share the business case in terms of why they're important, and then translate that into practice. Because if you hear, hey, we should be more self-aware, okay, that's great. And if I don't know, if I'm not particularly self-aware or I don't know how to do it, now I'm left with an idea that's really difficult to implement. So that was my primary motivation.
Okay, very interesting. You know, and you just said that, you know, do you do good or do you lead well? And you said the two are not mutually exclusive. They actually work together well. And it's interesting because it's not quite the same, but like in my writing, I talk about in the military, when we had the watch, when we were like the officer of the deck on the bridge of a submarine, we were in charge of the mission and the people. So it was both, right? And so, and it's always the mindset I've always had in leadership in business is that it's the people and the mission, you know, and the two can combine together. And if you're considerate about the people and considerate about the mission, you're going to be more successful than if you just focus on one or the other. And it's almost, it's not the same, but it's a little bit similar. It's the and. And I think that's what I got excited when I read your material, because it's consistent with what I have seen as well.
Well, what I love about that example, because I'd love to build on that, because no matter how great, and I'd be curious for your take on this, I imagine no matter how amazing the mission is that you're about to go on and how intricately laid out it is, if you don't have the people on board and you don't have them engaged in the execution of that mission, well, I would imagine there's a significant risk that that's not going to achieve what you set out to do. And I love how you look at that in that way, because I think that for us, sometimes, once again, we can overweight either of those sides. I think it's really critical to say, hey, the people are essential to integrate our mission. No matter what field we are in, the people are the key.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not one or the other, it's both. And I think that's what I like about what you talk about, because it's this idea that you need both to be able to be successful. And I think that's missing in a lot of managers, where they're focused solely on mission or they're focused maybe solely on people and they forget the mission. It's bringing the two together. So yeah, that's great.
Well,
so this, go ahead. Go ahead.
we're having so much fun. We're jumping in. No, I was going to say earlier, because you made such an amazing point, John, around and it's the connective tissue, which is so powerful, right? Yeah. Is that now you're bringing both together rather than waiting on one side or the other. It's how do you build a bridge between the two?
Yeah, absolutely. So define positive leadership, because I might in my back of my mind have an idea what that might be. It's a very specific concept. When you say positive leadership, what does it mean in your mind?
Well, positive leadership is around when our words, when our behaviors have a positive impact on the environment around us. So it leads to progress. It leads to positive gains. We're advancing. And then that essentially summarizes, it's for people, it's for organizations, it's our goals. All of those things are moving forward. And I think that's the real magic, is when we're able to accomplish that.
That makes a lot of sense. I always say that leadership is like a pebble dropping in a pond. There's ripples that you leave, and those ripples can be negative or they can be positive. And you know, my thought is I want to leave a positive legacy everywhere I go, that I've impacted the organization, I've impacted the people that work for me, and you want to leave a positive legacy, not a negative one. But there are some managers out there that, you know, they don't care what's in their wake. They're just getting, you know, focusing on the objective and getting it done. And they leave a lot of, you know, a lot of frustrated employees and disengaged employees in their wake because they're so singular focused on their particular mission or their particular career path. And so what you're saying is positive leadership is the idea of you're making those positive ripples in the organization and the people and the results.
Absolutely. You're doing good and you're enabling people to be at their best. You're enabling yourself to be at your best. And that is the most energizing force that we can have when we feel like we're making a positive contribution, as some psychologists call it, the bigger than self goals. So it's more than just me. I'm contributing positively to my environment, to the global community.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. So some of these qualities you talk about, self-awareness, this is interesting. Why is self-awareness so important and why is it such a challenge often for people, maybe even as they move up and higher up in the chain of command?
Yeah, there's so much great work done around this. There was one study that looked at success, predictors of success personally and professionally. There was over 500,000 people that participated in this. They looked at all kinds of demographic variables, education, experience, on and on. The only variable that significantly predicted success for over 500,000 people was their level of self-awareness. And what's interesting, even more, a little scary, is research estimates that between 10 and 30% of us are reasonably self-aware. Oh, wow. So there are more of us than less that are not self-aware. And it makes so much sense to me when you think about it, because the more we're aware of who we are and how we come across to other people, the better equipped we are to shift what we say and what we do in that environment in order to have the impact we want to have. And I'm sure you know, I'm sure your listeners know, your viewers know, people who are wildly not self-aware, and they think they're having one impact on the environment, they're having the exact opposite. People don't trust them. People don't want to engage with them at the next level. And so it's so important when those two things come together, because then what it means is that I'm having the impact that I most want to have. And I'm aware of the fact when I'm not. So I can pivot and change and use a different strategy. Mm. And your question around what makes it so challenging is that most of us have, I call it the illusion of competence, because we are ourselves every single day. Well, who knows me better than me? Yet the challenge is I'm inherently biased, and we all tend to have a self-serving bias, see ourselves in the best light. So unless we can get feedback from our environment and from the people around us, we are likely to step on our own rakes and create some challenges. So This is why self-awareness is so mission critical to our success as individuals and as business leaders.
We'll be right back after a quick word from our sponsors. Leadership skills are like any other skills. You need to practice them to get better at them. Best-selling leadership author John S. Rennie knows this. That's why he's written a new book called You Have the Watch. It's a guided journal for leaders designed to take you through an entire year of leadership training. By the end of the year, you will master 50 of the most important leadership skills. If you want to have a greater impact on the results and people in your organization, go to youhavethewatch.com and pick up your copy today.
Yeah, it you know, to me it registers the fact that the number of people who are self-aware is very low, and it's one of the sources of frustration for me, because I think the people that consume this type of content, so leadership podcasts and read books and they're watching TED Talks, these are typically good leaders that are trying to get better. Right. And it's the ones that are terrible that don't think they need to get better. And that's been a source of frustration to me. It's like, how do I reach those people that really need to hear these messages? So,
well, I love that. And a fun research aside is that the higher your level of confidence in your performance, in fact, the lower your competence. And that's based on countless studies. So confidence does not equate to competence.
Interesting.
And another fascinating piece is that, and it comes out of the research around bias, the more adamant that people are that they're not biased, evidence suggests very strongly that they're the most biased among us.
Interesting.
And the challenge is we're so adamant, we're so strongly held in our convictions, we don't see contrary evidence or information. So we keep executing a failing mission despite all of the data around us. And that's once again what makes self-awareness so powerful and yet so challenging to come by. So it, in a lot of ways, it's the ultimate competitive advantage.
Yeah. Interesting. Wow. All right. Okay. So the science backs up what I've seen and a source of frustration for me. I love my listeners because they're always trying to get better and they're reading my books and they're consuming content. They want to get better and better. And I think it's great, but you know, the purpose of this podcast is to build a world with better bosses. And so we're making the people that listen are getting better, but how do we get more people listening and more people engaged and realize that this is good for their career? It's good for their businesses. You know, we're trying to get them to be better, but it's interesting. It's hard. But the fact that such a small portion are not self-aware kind of rings true from what I've seen as well. Yeah, absolutely. One area is humility, which is kind of, you know, as a way, it's a bit counterintuitive. Because humility is often seen as weakness and, you know, leaders are supposed to be strong, but, how should we be thinking about humility when it comes to leadership?
Yeah, it's such a great point that you make. And what's interesting, again, let's refer back to the research. When people say, what type of leader would you most want to work for? Humility ends up being right at the top of the list.
Interesting.
When you ask leaders, how important are each of the following qualities to your success? Humility ends up at the very bottom.
Right.
It's because of your point and that mistaken assumption, well, humility is weakness. And that's a misattribution and a misunderstanding of what humility is, because humility is almost a special extension of self-awareness, because the definition is when I'm humble, I'm comfortable with what I know and where my strengths lie, and I'm equally comfortable with what I don't know and where my strengths do not lie. And I recognize there are probably more of those than the former. And so now by being that, having that advanced level of awareness and acceptance, now what that does is say, hey, I understand where I add the most value, and I'm also open to when I need some support and assistance. And what's really cool about the research around humility and humble leadership in particular is, probably not surprisingly, humble leaders tend to drive high levels of engagement. Why? And you talked about bad bosses earlier, John. It's not all about them. It's not all about me. Because now if I'm working for you and you're a humble leader, guess what? You're going to shine the spotlight on me, which makes me feel really awesome, really valued. Now I'm going to want to bring my best to the job every single day, which now makes us all look good because we're not concerned about who gets the credit. And as they say, a rising tide lifts all boats, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's so, so powerful. And now what it also does when we exhibit humility, it maximizes the chances that people are going to provide us with constructive feedback, because we're going to demonstrate that openness. Mm. Hey, John, in order for me to be at my best, you've got to call me out on things. So please let me know when I'm not having a positive impact. Cool. Versus if I'm a narcissistic bad boss, as you call it, right? Well, I'm going to get angry when someone raises a helpful suggestion. Yeah. Well, am I going to bother to share that in the future? Absolutely not. And I'd love to share a quote, because to me, it's a beautiful leadership mantra and life mantra from Adam Grant out of Wharton. And he's the best-selling author of Think Again. He's got some amazing TED Talks. So I'll paraphrase. He says, I speak with the conviction as if I'm right, and I listen with the conviction as if I'm wrong. Mm. And I love that. That's just a mic drop quote for me, because most of us are great at advocating passionately. I wonder how many of us listen as passionately about, maybe I haven't got this all figured out.
Yeah, that's so neat. You know, I ran into humility in my first manufacturing plant. I was 32 years old, and I realized, you know, I thought I had to have all the answers, because I was the plant manager, and you know, but I was the youngest plant manager in this plant's history. And one of the things I found, the magic of that job was once I shut up and I started listening, I became a little more humble, and I just listened and observed and talked to people. I realized that all the answers were there. Everything I needed to know to do my job resided in the minds of my employees, but I had to sort of be humble enough to listen to the ideas and sort of, you know, consider all the different opinions and to be able to kind of, you know, to listen to the stuff. So I think part of that is I learned it just because it made sense, and I was able to make better decisions having listened to a lot of my more experienced employees. And so I learned humility not by reading, but by action. It actually worked really well in that operation. And then I ended up reading Jim Collins' Good to Great and learned about these level five leaders that with high levels of humility and personal will. And I went, this is a leadership model I can buy into, because that's what I've been trying to do. But I didn't know that was an acceptable leadership model, you know? So when I learned the humility and strong will was, there was a cool combination. I was like, I have permission to be humble. So I'm really glad to see you embracing that, because I really do think that's an important element of leadership that we don't talk about enough.
I'm with you 110% on that. And I would say in this, and we talked about this at the beginning as well, in terms of just the environment in which we're operating right now, things are moving so fast. Like the pace of change is unbelievable. Yeah. So for us, we need access to so many different perspectives and sources of information, and things are changing on the dime. So if we're not listening, as you say, so much stuff is going to pass us by. Yeah. And nobody can know everything.
Yes,
so we've got our job as leaders is really to drive to maximize employee voice, the people around us, so we can learn from their experiences and their perspectives, because that's truly the pathway to success.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, absolutely. That's so neat. So you've got a new book coming up, and I'm excited to talk about that. It's called A Time to Lead, Mastering Yourself So You Can Master Your World. Now, why did you decide to tackle this subject, self-mastery?
Yeah, it's thank you for asking. Well, the first book, when I talk about both books in tandem, the first book I would say is a Venn diagram. It's like 75% leading others and then 25% leading ourselves. Mm. And then for my forthcoming book, A Time to Lead, the vast majority of the focus is on self-leadership. So 75% self-leadership, 25% leading others. And fundamentally, great leadership is essentially driven by great self-leadership. Mm. So we have to lead ourselves. And this has never been more important than right now, because as leaders, we are being asked to contribute to and have perspectives on things that we never had to before. So I really wanted to drive the focus inward and say, so how do we go about the journey of mastering ourselves so that we can be at our best for the organizations that we lead?
I love that. A friend of mine wrote a book called, his name is Mike Irwin. He wrote a book called Lead Yourself First. And so the idea is, yeah, take care of that, you know, put your mask on first before helping others. It's a big part of it. And I know, having spent 30 plus years in the trenches as a leader, I know that if you're not physically, spiritually, emotionally, financially, you know, physically strong, you're gonna struggle, because you're gonna face a lot of, let's just say, not everybody's happy when you walk in as a leader, right? Not everybody is just happy that you're in charge, right? And your competitors aren't just gonna bend, you know, fall over and let you take over their market share, right? So it seems as if everyone's against you when you're in leadership roles. So you have to be strong. You have to be able to have a good self-mastery if you're gonna be able to, you know, overcome all of these internal and external forces that are on you as a leader. So I really commend you for this, because I think it's a really important subject. You talk a little bit about mastering mindset and emotion. So how are these things, how are these important in a leadership role?
I would say they're the foundational building blocks. Because our mindset, it's amazing. When you look at the research, there's so much incredible research around mindset. And I would encourage your listeners, viewers, to check out Carol Dweck's work around growth mindset and fixed mindset.
Yeah.
And what the evidence is overwhelming overwhelmingly clear on is the fact that our mindset impacts our experiences. Yes. So when we go, so if I show up to a meeting and think, oh, this is going to be the worst meeting I've ever attended, going to be a complete waste of time. Guess what? We're likely right, because all I'm going to look for are data in my environment that supports that case. So our mindset and how it impacts our reality and our lived experience is so important. And do we see a situation as an opportunity, or do we see it as a threat? Mm. And all of those things matter. And so for us to master our mindset and be very clear and understand what kind of mindset I'm in and how I'm approaching things, what data I'm going to be most sensitive towards, really crucial. So a foundational building block, and to maximize the times we spend in growth mode. Then on the emotion side, and you touched on this as well, right? As a leader, you're just going to get challenges from all kinds of different directions.
Yes.
The people on your team, the people within your organization, your competitors, your stakeholders, your clients. So there's always challenges. So then being very clear on our emotions and recognizing the emotions that we're experiencing. So there's lots of fantastic research around, the more we can label our emotions accurately, the more effective we are at processing them, the more resilient we are, the quicker we can bounce back and perform at our best. And then emotions are invaluable data points. Although a lot of people talk about, well, you got to get emotions out of business, nothing could be further from the truth.
I agree.
Human beings are human. As you said, they're messy. Emotions are an integral part of our daily working and personal lives. And so they are data points. And what we want to do is understand our emotions, not avoid them, not run away from them, not judge them. Because once we understand them, we can figure out what triggers us positively and negatively, and then orient ourselves so we can be maximally resilient, which again, in today's environment, is an absolute necessity.
Yeah, I so agree with this. I think emotions are, you touched on, I think you can't be a robot in business, right? But then the other thing is you can't be this, you can't be just completely emotional with everything that comes your way. There is this balance that occurs. But if you don't have emotion, people don't see you as real, and they don't see you as authentic, right? That you just hold back on everything. And I've had bosses like that before. You know, you tell them, well, you know, the plant just burned down. All right. Like, what do you mean? All right. The plant just burned down. You know, like, have a human reaction to this. This is a bad news, you know? And then you have others that fly off the handle for the smallest things. And then you're afraid to tell that person anything because they overreact to every little source of bad news that happens. So it ends up being what we used to call a good news company. Nobody gives any bad news because they don't want the boss to fly off the handle. So, you know, again, there's a really important balance that you have to find that is really important. And I think, but like you said, you cannot leave your emotions at home. You have to bring them to work because you are a human leading other humans. And so you have to act like it, you know?
Well, and you nailed it. And that's where the mindset and emotions are the foundational building blocks, because it's that intersection. It's the and. You talked about and earlier, right? It's building the bridge between those two. And I've spoken with over 70 CEOs and best-selling authors and TED speakers over the last couple of years. And I spoke with Gerard Schmidt. He's the former CEO of Diebold Nixdorf, a global organization. And I love how he characterized it. So he said, we have to lead with our hearts and our minds. And here's the trick, though. In certain situations, we lead more with our minds. Yeah. In other situations, we lead more with our hearts. And that's the crux of exceptional leadership, is knowing the distribution, right? And it's never one versus the other. It's figuring out the right mix. It's like Goldilocks, right? Yeah. And keeping both of those levers in play. And I just love that, looking at it as a Venn diagram, because to your point, sometimes we have to lean in more to our hearts and the emotion of the moment and what's happening. And other times, hey, there can be challenging decisions we have to make, and we can get absolutely overrun by our emotions, or derailed by them. So recognizing what the situation requires and being able to draw on that effectively in an authentic way, that is absolutely essential to drive trust in ourselves from other people. So
So you nailed it right there. So important, very critical. Well, when does this new book come out?
Comes out September 13th. So okay. Really excited about that on a Tuesday. So supply chain willing, it'll be distributed. And so really looking forward to that. And it's off to the printers already. So a way to go.
Fantastic. That's so good. So how can people find out more about you and, you know, your first book and then this new book?
Well, they're both, thank you for that. They're both available on Amazon. And you can find more about me at craigdowden.com. There are links to my different videos and articles that I write and the opportunity to sign up for my newsletter where I share the science and practice of positive leadership in my newsletter. So would love to continue the conversation or reach out on LinkedIn. Always happy to connect. Say that John sent you. So.
Absolutely. That's a great thing. And we'll put links in the show notes for all these resources. Craig, I want to thank you for coming on the show. You've given us a lot to think about. I love the fact that there's this intersection between the science and the practice, and then you're bringing these things together. You can back it up with the research, and that's what we need to see. That's what we need to read as leaders. So I would encourage our leaders to check out Do Good to Lead Well, and also the new book coming out, which is called A Time to Lead, Mastering Yourself So That You Can Master Your World. Craig, thank you for coming on the show and sharing all of your insight.
Thank you so much. It was an absolute pleasure. And look forward to continuing the conversation.
I do as well. Well, thank you. Well, that's it for today. Thank you for listening to Deep Leadership. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and share so we can continue to build a world with better bosses. Until next time, this is John Rennie saying take care and lead well.
Thank you for listening to Deep Leadership.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for all you do.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. For more information and updates, please visit our website at www.deepleadershippodcast.com or johnsrennie.com. Until next time, take care.
Are you passionate about saving the planet for future generations? Do you want to learn how to do it? If yes, then you need to tune in to the Nature Backed Podcast. It's a talk show covering the changing world around us, from renewable energy, sustainable agriculture, circular economy, to ESG and social innovation. Don't miss this opportunity to discover how you can join the movement and make a difference. Subscribe to the Nature Backed Podcast today on your favorite platform and get ready to be amazed.
Welcome, explorers of the human experience. This is Let's Talk Soul, and I'm your host, Claudia Monticelli. We're not afraid of the great mysteries of existence here. Soul versus consciousness, we're on it. Spirituality versus science, we've got that covered too. Join us in navigating these profound topics with wisdom, curiosity, and a dash of audacity. Whether you're a spiritual veteran or just starting your journey, Let's Talk Soul is your passport to the unknown. Let's Talk Soul, diving into the depths of the human spirit. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.